You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
September the 22nd, 2020, President Trump says he will announce his Supreme Court pick Saturday at the White House, the exact time to be announced. Senator Mitt Romney now says he will support moving ahead on any nominee that Trump brings forward for the Supreme Court. That was going to be critical, because the vote margin is very narrow, and we've already got two Republican defections, Collins and Murkowski, who said they were not going to vote to confirm any nominee. But Romney was going to be a big swing vote. And to that extent also, Senator Cory Gardner, Colorado, said, I'm now committed to supporting the Supreme Court nominee. So Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham, Republican, South Carolina, says, we have the votes. We had the votes to confirm Justice Ginsburg's replacement before the election, and we are going to move forward in the committee. We're going to report the nomination out of the committee to the floor of the U.S. Senate so we can vote before the election. Well, who's going to be the nominee? More likely, we're going to see a female jurist. President Trump had already indicated that. And the top contender appears to be at this time someone President Trump met with yesterday afternoon at the White House, Judge Amy Coney Barrett. She's a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Court. She is considered to be the front runner on the short list. She's 48 years old, a Roman Catholic, the mother of seven children, including two adopted children. And it appears the left is lining up and sharpening the knives to attack her over her Catholicism. And in fact, when she went forward for her federal court nomination, Senator Dianne Feinstein said, quote, the dogma lives loudly within you, and that's a concern. The dogma? You're referring to her Catholic religion? You call it a dogma? Well, the new numbers are out, and the U.S. coronavirus death toll, if you believe the numbers, is 200,000. 200,000, this is according to Johns Hopkins University. Brazil has the second highest death toll. The U.S. leads them by 40,000. India comes in third. And, of course, the debate continues over when we're going to have a vaccine, how effective will it be, and when can we start distributing it and how. President Trump telling the United Nations, telling the U.N. General Assembly today, the United Nations must hold China accountable for its actions. Reference the China virus, because it came from China. The World Health Organization, we've already been withdrawing from that, also under fire from the president, because the World Health Organization, on behalf of the UN, working with them, was basically echoing the talking points from the Chinese government, information that turned out to be false, that in fact it was worse than what they were saying. And they were lying to us. I had a report in the last hour that because of the closures in New York City, almost 90% of the city's restaurants and bars in New York City could not pay their rent in full in August. We'll wait and see what happens here for September. And, of course, the push is underway for mail-in balloting because of COVID. Yep, you got to have mail-in balloting. An opportunity for fraud. A New York judge ordering the U.S. Postal Service to prioritize election mail Monday and to approve overtime for postal workers. The judge writing in the decision that postal workers should be allowed to make extra deliveries and work overtime before the November election so all the ballots can be delivered on time. And meanwhile, a federal judge in Wisconsin says Wisconsin absentee ballots can be counted in 2020, even up through November 9. The election is November 3rd, but if they're delivered by November 9 and they have a postmark on November 3, then we'll count them. And Joe Biden continues to hold close to his chest as any nominee he might name for the Supreme Court. He's indicated it would be a black woman, but beyond that, he doesn't want to say. He said, if they elect me, they'll have plenty of time to see who I will name. President Trump says, and I agree, he doesn't want to name anyone because we'd see how radical he would put the court. And I think also, Joe Biden is waiting for someone tell me, I'm waiting for instructions. He'll be a puppet. I will guarantee you he will be a puppet.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
So are you ready to get out from the COVID-19 scare? We might still need to be careful in some areas. I do encourage businesses to make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And of course, if you open up and then a client or an employee or someone else surfaces with COVID-19, you need to reevaluate what's going on. I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. They can determine at a very reasonable cost what you need to do before you open, once you are open, and as you move forward. It just makes good sense, doesn't it? Wellington Environmental, for 30 years, has been treating situations at hospitals, schools, daycare centers, private homes. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air. So my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Bill Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
We've got the votes to confirm Justice Ginsburg replacement before the election. We're going to move forward in the committee. We're going to report the nomination out of the committee to the floor of the United States Senate so we can vote before the election. That's the constitutional process. The nominee is going to be supported by every Republican in the Judiciary Committee, and we've got the votes to confirm the justice on the floor of the Senate before the election, and that's what's coming.
Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham, Republican, South Carolina, on Fox News, saying we have the votes. And when the president sends us a name, we will act quickly in the committee, get it to the floor of the Senate, and confirm. Any nomination, of course, of a U.S. Supreme Court justice comes as a nomination from the president, not an appointment, a nomination. And then the Senate is to advise and counsel and make a decision. And, of course, this being an election year, now 42 days out, many are saying this is too close, too tight of a timeline to do so. No, it's been done before in small areas of time. I believe Ruth Bader Ginsburg actually went through in less than 60 days. But the real issue here is politics, and because Trump will be nominating another candidate. When Obama was still in office, he had to replace Scalia. And he had 8+ months. He produced the name of Merrick Gardner. Well, the Senate at that time controlled by Republicans, and they wouldn't even take a vote on it. I think they probably made a mistake. They probably should have at least held a vote and rejected it. But they didn't do it at all. And they cited the so-called Biden rule. There really is no Biden rule. They just call it that. But yes, by that same Joe Biden, VP Joe Biden, the one now running for president on the Democrat ticket, because he had stated previously during a Bush administration that no, the incoming presidency should make a decision on a Supreme Court nominee. That was Biden's position then. And, of course, it is now. But in 2016, again, well, he was on favor of, yes, let's move forward right now while Obama can make the appointment. And don't forget, Obama was literally begging Ruth Bader Ginsburg, give up the seat. Let us replace you now. And she didn't. She probably was convinced that Hillary was going to win. So she's going to let Hillary name her replacement. That didn't turn out, did it? And, of course, we're hearing from her daughter, her granddaughter, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's granddaughter, that among her dying words, she did not want Trump to nominate anyone for her vacancy, that it was the last thing she wanted to be done. Do you really think on her deathbed that was one of the things that she was concerned about? Her granddaughter is quoted as saying, quoting her grandmother, quote, my most fervent wish is that I will not be replaced until a new president is installed. That was what she was more concerned about than anything else at that point. Well, you go back to 2016, and Justice Ginsburg was in question about a SCOTUS confirmation hearing during election year. And at that time, while Obama, lame duck as he was trying to replace Scalia, Democrat leaders had no problem with moving forward, and neither did Ginsburg. She said in a 2016 New York Times interview, there's nothing in the Constitution that says the president stops being the president in his last year. And she called for Merrick Garland, to receive a confirmation vote in the Senate. And when she was asked, well, should it take up a vote? She said, that's their job. But Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell refused to move forward. And then Trump, coming in, got to nominate Neil Gorsuch, replacing Scalia. Now the Ginsburg issue. Senator Ted Cruz, who at one time had been mentioned as a possible Supreme Court nominee, and I thought he would have been excellent for it. I really did. I thought once Trump was elected president, I really want to see Ted Cruz become a member of the Supreme Court. It's a lifetime appointment, but he also is a great jurist in many ways from things I've read and seen about him, but he basically wants to stay in the political fray. So he didn't really want to. He doesn't want to now either. He's made it clear that he does not want to take part in it. But what he does say is the very fact that Trump was elected. And what we're facing now, well, this is exactly the destiny of Trump and the American voters who were supporting him.
I think this is exactly why President Trump was elected. He was elected to nominate principled constitutionalists to the Supreme Court. And this is why the American people elected a Republican majority. And they did so repeatedly. They elected a Republican majority in the Senate in 2014. They did so again in 2016. And in 2018, they grew our majority in the Senate.
And in fact, by those numbers, it suggests it's a mandate that, yes, this president, even though he's in the last 42 days of his first term and maybe only term, I hope not, that he should exercise that authority. It is a, as I mentioned yesterday, it is a prize for every president to have an opportunity to name someone to the U.S. Supreme Court. The court currently stands at 9. I think it's been up to 15 at one point. And they worked with 8 for a period of time in the absence of Scalia. But going into this election, Senator Cruz says if we have 8 justices, you got basically a 4-4 split. He said you are going to be touting a constitutional crisis.
We know this is a country that is divided, that there's a lot of anger. Joe Biden has been explicit that if he doesn't win on Election Day, he intends to challenge the legitimacy of this election. He's already hired a top-tier team of lawyers headed by veteran Supreme Court advocates. All of us remember what happened in the 2000 election, Bush versus Gore. I was part of the legal team representing George W. Bush and Bush versus Gore. I think what we saw in Florida and Bush versus Gore with litigation challenging the election, if Joe Biden loses, we're going to see all over the country, not just one state, but multiple states.
I agree. Because they are geared up and ready for a loss and excuses. And you want to know how bad it's getting? I mean, they're not mincing any words. A leftist author, Reza Aslan, he tweeted out that if they even try to replace RBG, we burn the entire effing thing down. Burn down Congress. Another leftist author said, burn it all down. A Canadian political science professor calling for arson. Some say that's accusations of a terrorist threat, but again, if you're on the left, you can make all these remarks and nobody's going to bother you. They just kind of applaud and say, keep going. But this professor wrote, or in a tweet, burn Congress down before letting Trump try to appoint anyone to SCOTUS. And then a professor at that same university, an attorney in Canada, was worried about the students in that professor's class. He said, your professor is promoting violence against political enemies. If you were a young woman in his class who was a Trump supporter, would you risk being a target of his violent rage if he found out about you? Should you transfer to a different class? Good question. Maybe going to school in Canada, but still holds U.S. citizenship, and they would have a right to vote, but better not say anything about Trump. And there are a lot of people that will not put signs on their cars or on their streets or anywhere else because they fear retaliation and attacks. If they're going to rip the cap off of a young boy in a restaurant because he's simply wearing a MAGA hat, there's nothing to say that they won't go to the next level of violence. And in fact, they have. We know they have in various places. And if we get into Amy Coney Barrett being named as the nominee and going before the Senate, she is going to face attacks again because of her religion, because she's Catholic. They're going to look at anything and everything they can to destroy her. Patricia Heaton, an actress, of course, from Everybody Loves Raymond, Christian. She went on her Twitter feed Sunday declaring, bracing followers for, quote, breathtaking ignorance as the world of politics heats up. Here's what she tweeted. Friends, be prepared for social media to be filled with an onslaught of arrogant pronouncements based on breathtaking ignorance of religion in general, Christianity specifically, Catholicism in particular, by people who would not recognize God if he bit them on the bun. I like that. No, that was a dog. You know, God spelled backwards. Who knows? But they've done it before. I mean, they chastised her, criticized her, slandered her because of her religion when she was facing nomination for a federal court position. I mentioned the last hour, and some of you are old enough to remember, when JFK was running for president, one of the biggest concerns across much of the nation, even among Catholics, was would he be beholden to the Vatican and the Pope? In other words, would the President of the United States be taking action based on what he was told to do by the Vatican? Most folks didn't believe that would happen, and of course JFK ends up winning, and there was no Vatican interference. But Ted Cruz says again, if we go into this election and we have not replaced Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the nation is going to be facing, as he said, a constitutional crisis.
If the Democrats succeed in keeping this seat vacant, there would be only 8 justices on the Supreme Court. 8 justices, if they divide 4-4, they cannot make a decision. The court has no authority divided 4-4. And so we all remember the 36 days of uncertainty, of chaos that played out in Bush versus Gore. Without filling this seat, this election could last weeks or months. And with the kind of chaos we're seeing, that constitutional crisis, I think, would be incredibly unhealthy for our country.
And I have to agree, it would be. So we cannot have Justice, the Supreme Court at 4-4, having to make a ruling on something to do with the election. And the left is already making its plans. Things they're going to do. And one of them that's already been telegraphed comes from Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House. And she's saying we can impeach President Trump every day of the week for anything he does. And we will look at impeaching him and Attorney General Barr. The idea is, again, that if we send impeachment articles from the House to the Senate, they will have to stop what they're doing and focus on the impeachment. My guest in the last hour said, no, there's still plenty of mechanisms to keep that kind of thing from clogging up the works. But they're going to try. And they have other plans. Oh, the Democrats have some plans that absolutely include blowing up everything, everything. When we come back, Senator Graham will give you some of his thoughts, and then you're going to hear from Don Lemon Fruitcake proposing explosive material.
Road again, just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
They're talking about changing the Electoral College. If they keep the House, the Senate, and the White House, this country will change fundamentally. The Electoral College will be obliterated. We'll go to a popular vote. D.C. and Puerto Rico will become states. There'll be 104 senators. It goes on and on and on. There'll be additional members of the Supreme Court. They'll all be liberal. They're going to take the process, the rules, and change them to their benefit. Now, the only thing stopping them is you, the voter. If you want to help me and other Republicans get into the game, they're killing us financially. I'm in South Carolina, not exactly a liberal state. My opponent's going to raise $80 million. I need conservatives to help me. You need to help us all.
That's Lindsey Graham making it very clear that don't take it for granted that Trump's going to win and that the Republicans will continue to hold the Senate. And he talked about the plan for the Democrats if they get in. He mentioned the Electoral College. I'll come back to that. But that other issue of packing the court. The Supreme Court, since 1869, has had 9 justices. But there have been as few as 6 at one point. And also 9, including a Supreme Court justice, making it 10. But since 1869, the number's been set at 9. However, there was a Roosevelt proposal, FDR, during the time he was in. He was proposing, because he couldn't get some things done he wanted done with his New Deal initiative, he wanted the authority to add 6 more judges, 6 more to the 9 they had. Maybe able to him as a president and every president going forward to nominate someone for every member of the court over the age of 70 years and 6 months. That was his idea of court packing. Kamala Harris on the vice president position at this point for the Democrat ticket had also said that she's in favor of packing the court, basically saying we need to do whatever we need to get control of the court. Now, back to this issue of getting rid of the Electoral College. The Democrats have been extremely happy with the Electoral College until Hillary lost. because they were sure Trump could not break down the blue wall of the states that made up what they considered their guard in the blue electoral college. But he did. And from then on, they've been saying, well, we don't even care about the electoral college. We want to go back to popular vote. And that same plan got presented again by Don Lemon Fruitcake the other night, along as he was talking to his Chris Cuomo, also on CNN, and Cuomo didn't really buy into it that much. Listen to the exchange between Cuomo and Lemon.
No matter what happens, everybody sticks.
We're going to have to blow up the entire system. And you know what we're going to have to do?
No, I don't know.
You know what we're going to? Yes, yeah. What you have to do?
You just got to.
Honestly, from what your closing argument is, you're going to have to get rid of the Electoral College because the people.
I don't see it.
Because the minority in this country decides who the judges are and they decide who the president is.
You need a constitutional amendment to do that.
And if Joe Biden wins, Democrats can sack the courts. And they can do that amendment, and they can get it passed.
Well, you need two-thirds vote in the Congress and three-quarters of the state legislatures.
They may be able to do that.
Maybe.
That should serve as a warning for you. The left's plan is very transparent. They don't try to hide it anymore. We get in, we'll stack the court, we'll make D.C. a state, make two more Democrat senators available, and we'll do the same thing with Puerto Rico and add two more. My guest coming up in the next segment says the Constitution itself is at stake in this election. Based on what you just heard, I think you would agree. Please stand by.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Glad to welcome back political editor for The Federalist, John Daniel Davidson. Glad to have you back on board, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there were a couple of pieces that you had published I wanted to deal with, and the one you just released today I do want to spend some time on about that the Democrats are going to embrace anti-Catholic bigotry. I want to get into that. But the item before that that you put out, I think, yesterday in The Federalist, the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg means the Constitution is on the ballot. Go ahead and start explaining that.
Well, the Democrats have been very clear that if Trump and Senate Republicans try to nominate and confirm a Supreme Court justice to fill the seat vacated by Ginsburg, they will pack the court if they win control of the Senate and the White House. They will create new states. They will abolish the Senate. They'll take to the streets. In other words, they're willing to shred the Constitution if they don't get their way on this Supreme Court seat and are essentially blackmailing the country with their threats.
And of course, blackmailing those of us who want to defend the Constitution, but also giving a green light to those who want to tear it up, burn it, and re-transform this country, as they're trying to say.
Yeah, and the Democrats have been angling for tearing up the Constitution for a long time. Every mechanism in the Constitution that guards against a pure majoritarian rule, so the Electoral College, the Senate, these things in particular have always been thorns in the side of progressive Democrats who see them as impediments to their seizure of power. So, and the Supreme Court falls into that as well. They think it's not fair that Republicans could name a Supreme Court justice, and they're willing to essentially burn it all down, as some of them said earlier this week, in order to prevent Republicans really from doing what the people elected them to do, which is to fill Supreme Court vacancy.
And before we deal more on the vacancy itself and that issue in the Supreme Court, the Constitution provides how many representatives based upon the census each state gets, but by Constitution, every state gets two senators. And you point out in your article that what's upsetting to the left is why should sparsely populated conservative states like South Dakota get as many votes in the Senate as California and New York. And we know why they want to have more control, but they don't think South Dakota should even be represented.
Exactly, and that would be the effect of essentially abolishing the Senate or taking away the equal representation of states in the Senate. They want a country that is more or less governed by the coasts, by large cities, and by heavily populated blue states. And that's their vision for the country. They don't think that states have any sovereignty as such, and that residents of those states should have a say in how they're governed, which is akin to their argument against the Electoral College. Same basic premise. They think it should be pure majoritarian votes so they can run up massive majorities in the cities and essentially ignore vast swaths of the country. But the founders of our country created the Constitution and they created the Electoral College because the president is supposed to represent the entire country, not just large states or large cities.
Yeah, the vision of our founders is amazing when you look at it. Not only the Electoral College, but setting up two houses as a check balance, and that all states would have a equal number in one of the houses, but the other would be based on the population they did represent. I mean, that was far-sighted, almost as if they had a trip into the future and saw what we would be dealing with now. But I don't think they could envision going back and ripping it all up and throwing it out. I mean, and you mentioned the Electoral College. Before you joined us in the previous segment, I was pointing out the Democrats have been very good with Electoral College. I had no problems with it. In the last election, they were sure the Electoral College would hold Hillary in, that Trump could not break down that blue wall. And they might actually lose the popular vote, but they had the Electoral College votes, and it went upside down.
No, as soon as it doesn't go their way, they would, politically, they would like to get rid of the parts of the Constitution that they see as impediments. And so now the Electoral College is this anti-democratic, antiquated mechanism that should be abolished in favor of pure, raw democratic majorities on a nationwide basis. But you're absolutely right. What they thought was a mechanism that would play to their advantage turned out not to be. It wasn't in 2016, and increasingly it's looking like in 2020 it might not play to their advantage either. So expect, if they lose this election, expect the calls to abolish the Electoral College to grow even louder from not just the left, but from the Democratic Party establishment.
You're right, and you're listening, folks, to John Daniel Davidson, political editor for The Federalist. And in this article you also write, it's got a title above it, "Democrats Won't Stop at Packing the Court," and you add, "Do voters realize that? Every Republican running for office in November should make sure they do. GOP candidates, above all Trump himself, should be at pains to point out what we've seen previously from Democrats will seem like child's play compared to what we'll see if they win the White House and Senate."
That's right. And in this case, you just have to take the Democrats at their word.
Yeah, believe them.
They've
been transparent. Yeah, they say they're going to.
Yeah, they've been really clear about what they would like to do. They would like to pack the court. They would like to get rid of the Electoral College. They would like to get rid of the Senate. They would like to do all sorts of things. They'd like to create new states in Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C., on the assumption that they would be permanently Democratic states. They would like to lower the voting age to 16. There's all kinds of things that Democrats would like to do, and they've been really honest about it. And I think that Trump and Republicans running for election should just take them at their word, believe them.
Earlier today, President Trump said he will make an announcement on his Supreme Court nominee Saturday. Lindsey Graham has said, "We've got the votes." Romney is also now joining on, saying, "I will support it." So more than likely, it's going to go through. You did an article that was released today focusing on a couple of the nominees, both Catholic, Amy Coney Barrett and Barbara Lagoa. Amy Coney Barrett, of course, faced such vile remarks from Senator Dianne Feinstein, reference her religion when she was up for her federal appointment, saying that comparing her religion to dogma. But you're pointing out in this article that you can expect the Democrats will embrace all kinds of bigotry, anti-Catholic bigotry.
That's right. Anti-Catholic bigotry has a long and unfortunate history in America, going back to the 19th century when large numbers of Catholic immigrants came from Europe. But Democrats have quietly embraced it. And we see this every time a Catholic nominee from a Republican president is up for Senate confirmation. We've seen it throughout Trump's presidency, not just with Amy Coney Barrett, but with other nominees to the federal bench as well. And of course, that famous "the dogma lives loudly within you" quote from Dianne Feinstein was just one example. I mentioned in that same hearing for Amy Coney Barrett to be confirmed to the federal appellate judgeship, Senator Dick Durbin went on and on, you know, grilling her about whether she's an Orthodox Catholic and implying that there was something nefarious about being an Orthodox Catholic. You can't imagine them doing this with anyone else other than conservative Christians, and specifically conservative Catholics, and they know exactly what they're doing.
And to that extent, Biden is a Catholic leading their ticket, but obviously not an Orthodox Catholic that Senator Durbin seemed to be so concerned about.
Yeah, he's not a bad Catholic. In other words, he's not a Catholic that takes seriously the church's teaching on things like abortion and gay marriage. And that's what they're on and on about. They're implying, they're resurrecting an old smear against Catholics that they're not really loyal to the United States, that they're loyal to Rome, that they can't really be trusted with public office. And every time you hear a Democratic politician cast aspersions on someone's Catholic faith and imply that they can't discharge their duties in the public interest because they're a Catholic, they're engaging in an anti-Catholic trope, a bigoted trope that has an ugly history in this country, and they need to be called out for it.
And I'd mentioned in the segment before you joined us the JFK issue when he was running at that time that we can't have a Catholic. He might be answering to the Pope and the Vatican.
Exactly. And, you know, by the time JFK ran for president, a lot of that anti-Catholic rhetoric had subsided largely because of changes in America after World War II. But prior to that, in 1928, the Democratic nominee for president was a Catholic, Al Smith, and he faced horrible attacks for his religion, including attacks from the Ku Klux Klan, which hated Catholics. And so, you know, this is, again, I say this is part of a long history of anti-Catholic prejudice in the United States that the Democrats seem to be comfortable embracing and sort of engaging in every time there's a Catholic nominee who's a conservative or a Republican.
And Amy Coney Barrett, mother of six children, I think, and two of them adopted. I mean, when they go there, I think it's going to alienate, I hope, many Americans. I want to thank you for your time, John. As always, we appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. John Daniel Davidson, political editor with The Federalist. That's just trashy fighting, don't you think? I mean, you're going after someone's religion on that basis nowadays when we're supposedly on the left all about being inclusive? Right. I got something out of California I want to share with you. Stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
And it's bad, Leroy Brown. Baddest man in the whole damn town. Better than old King Kong. Meaner than the jungle.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
The sale of previously owned homes up 2.4% in August. That's about an annualized rate, they say, of $6 million. It's a third consecutive monthly increase, the highest level of home sales since 2006. Well, of course, the interest rates have a lot to do with it. Also, folks realizing, you know, I'll be able to work at home. The increase in rental prices, and why not put that money into a home as opposed to rental prices? Housing demand, robust, supply apparently not. And also where they're going. I talked to a realtor the other day, and they're talking about how much growth they're seeing in rural areas. Not necessarily real country, but getting out of the main cities, the main metro areas. Especially if they can work at home and they don't have to go in via car or train or whatever else they might be using. It's understandable. There would be less crime, less issues, maybe less taxes. That brings us to California. I'm looking at a piece penned by Ray Sanchez for CNN titled Wildfire Weary Californians, quote, tired of this being normal, consider uprooting their lives. We know many folks, of course, have left California. Taxes, obviously, being one of them. Taxes. And they keep going up. And, of course, the police protection being taken away and being defunded, that's going to encourage more to leave some areas. And now they're also pointing out you've got all these wildfires and natural disasters, earthquakes, and even if you're not threatened directly by the fire, the smoke, not the smog anymore, but now the smoke that rains down all over the area. So this guy that's lived in Southern California his entire life said, I'm ready to get out of here. He's considering... The guy needs to wake up. He said, I'm considering a cross-country move to Brooklyn or Manhattan. I don't think that's a good idea, but you go ahead. But they have all these folks talking about leaving the California dream because of what they call an apocalyptic summer of record-breaking temperatures, raging fires, lightning strikes, rolling blackouts, orange and Martian red skies. And then there's a subtitle in the middle of the page that should draw your attention. That's why it's there that way, folks. Climate-driven disasters become, quote, actual moving force for relocation. Climate-driven disasters. As to if, of course, all the wildfires are directly related to, quote, climate change, another way to sell that story. And they quote some of the experts as to how far or how much warmer California is. The past August, the warmest on record, according to the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. It goes on to also quote the National Climate Assessment, that a major, quote, state of science review. I don't know what state of science means anymore. It's just a term they throw out. State of science review of climate change and projected impacts on the U.S., but then buried in the copy. Buried in the copy. They say, but all of these expected increases in temperatures over the next few decades can be expected regardless of future emissions. In other words, it's going to happen anyway, according to their projections. So additional emissions, restrictions, and laws aren't going to change it. Oh, I hear you. Oh, you're saying, well, it will happen quicker if we don't have that. Okay, you go ahead and go along with that. Yeah, California, between the earthquakes and wildfires and taxes and the leftist attitude you have to deal with on a constant basis, if I were there, I'd want to leave too. I've never had a great desire to live in California. There's some parts of it that would be beautiful, but not that big of a deal to me. Maybe it is for some. In fact, decades ago, I had a choice. I could either go to L.A. for a job or St. Louis. I chose St. Louis. I think I made a good choice. I know I did. Of course, I also thought of, folks, you have to understand, I was a Texas boy, and I thought St. Louis is way, way, way north, Yankee land, you know. Of course, I thought anything north of Shreveport, Louisiana was the north of the Yankee land. I grew up in Texas where so deep south Texas that you ordered grits with Mexican food. That's deep south. Many folks are looking for an improvement, but climate change driving that many, I think it's a possible theory that has some foundation, but that's not why folks are really leaving California. But it makes for good copy for CNN and others on the left. Climate change is driving folks out of California. They're worried about the seas rising, the temperatures rising, and buried within the copy is that the emissions, even if they aren't there, the temperatures are going to increase anyway. But don't look for that part of the fact of the story. Not look for it to be highlighted anyway. As always, I appreciate you joining us and listening and letting your friends and neighbors know we're on the air. and supporting our sponsors. I appreciate sometimes if you just call them, let them know you thank them, even if you don't need any of their services. And I truly appreciate you listening and spreading the word. You folks are making this program bigger and bigger every day. I cannot thank you enough. So we'll work harder to make sure we're worthy of it. Working on tomorrow's show even right now. Be back tomorrow. Book it.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.